This is exclusive access into the heart of racing. The Racing Pulse Inner Sanctum.
Oh, and it's great to have in the Racing Pulse Inner Sanctum a neighbour of mine now down Bayside Way, James Winks, five-time Group 1 winning jockey for an Australia, one in Hong Kong, and he could have a big day on Saturday. How are you, mate?
Yeah, very good, mate. How are you?
Very good indeed. It's a busy period, Cup Week. You were to ride the Melbourne Cup on Sound. How big is Cup Week for you and all the boys?
Yeah, look, I suppose what a lot of people don't realise, it's not just Cup Week, it's a build-up before it. Like, it's a six-week build-up before it, and obviously Cup Week's the grand final, and everyone's trying to win a Melbourne Cup and all those big races, so it was good to get a ride in. Obviously, I didn't win it, but it was still a good feel to be a part of it again.
What's the pressure like for you boys, and especially someone like yourself who is a top-notch jockey but not getting the A-grade rides all the time? You're fighting for your rides during the spring carnival. How tough is it?
Yeah, look, there's probably only four or five guys, like you said, that I've, you know, got that pick of it. Probably, you know, your Ollie Zazaras, and obviously Williams had a great carnival. But, you know, you look at your young guys too, like your Jai McNeils and that, you know, you're all fighting for them rides, and you've got to make the most of your opportunities when they come. So in the sense of pressure, I was, the horse that I rode, obviously Sound, was 100-1 in both cups, but in the back of my mind, I knew he'd run a lot better than that. So there was no real pressure. It was just more about going out there and enjoying it and trying to get the best result for the owners.
How many cups have you ridden in now?
That was my fourth cup.
Yeah. What's the closest you've been?
I think I finished eighth on precedence one year for Bart.
Yeah.
So getting closer.
How much of a different race is it for you to ride in?
Oh, like I said, my first year I rode on my dear friend Duro Valley, and that year was obviously being your first was like this. It was, you know, from the Melbourne Cup parade to their national anthem. I remember Delta Goodrum sung it that year, and I'll stand there and I'm thinking, geez, this is, you know, pretty big. And it's probably not until you're part of it that you realise how big it is. And then I'd probably been, nearly 6 or 7 years since I've ridden it from that time to this year. And again, it wasn't until I was a part of it again from the Cup parade where I took my kids.
Yeah.
And obviously, yeah, it's a massive Australian sporting event, and it's great to be a part of.
Do you get more nervous?
Like I said, this year I wasn't,
not really,
wasn't nervous. I was just more part of enjoying the moment.
What was what's the atmosphere like in the jockeys' room?
Yeah, we can tell the boys are on the favourites. You can, you know, they're a little bit more quiet and a bit more focused, and, you know, I would be as well, you know. But I thought, I knew the horse that I was riding, Sound, and I knew what I had to do on him. And one of the main attributes was to try and get him to settle in the race, but obviously the race unfolded in a slow tempo. And
could you believe how slow it was?
Yeah, it was ridiculous. It's probably one of the slowest races I've ever ridden in. I was following Cross Counter. And we just kept getting shuffled back. And, yeah, for my horse to finish within three lengths of him, I thought he ran really well.
When you're in that situation, there's been a lot of talk post-Melbourne Cup. Well, why didn't the jockeys do something about it?
Yeah, I think, look, it's obviously, as you say, post-race, it's a lot easier to say things, and everyone has their speed maps. And the reality is, once the gates open, pretty much speed maps go out the window. You've obviously got in the mind a horse you'd like to follow, or where, you know, horses are supposed to be. A lot of it doesn't pan out that way, obviously, and the Melbourne Cup's one of them races where it didn't pan out. You have a lot of internationals that on paper roll forward, and they obviously, you know, there was one or two that did roll, but they just got the stack, the backwash, and just kept the stack up of the slow tempo was just horrendous from where I was anyway. And yeah, look, it is what it is, and you have someone like Craig Williams who bit the bullet and come across and got into the great spot and probably won the race, and you know, the rest is history now.
What do you make of Willow's ride and the other jockeys when they went back and had a look at it?
Yeah, well, look, like I said, he took a punt from the outside barrier. I don't know if it was by plan or what it is, or but, you know, good jockeys, it's just instinct. Obviously, the horse began well, and he knew what he had underneath him, and I obviously know the horse well myself, having ridden him and won his maiden on. He's a very good barrier horse, and you can afford to let him strike because he's not an aggressive horse either. So obviously took that punt, and he's a genius, but I reckon the training effort of Danny O'Brien probably didn't get enough accolades from where I sit. Obviously, I've ridden a lot for him, and I know how he operates, but to have a horse peak third up in the Melbourne Cup, I just didn't think it got enough recognition for the training effort that he did.
It was a phenomenal training effort. And when you won your maiden on him, did you ever envisage that he could reach those heights beyond the clear?
Well, look, it was a plan of Dan's. He got beat in a maiden, And then he said, oh, you got to go to Warrnambool and ride him.
I remember it. Yeah. I think he was second favourite.
Yeah,
there was another World Back Tours
one of
race.
Weary's at the time, and we won that race. And then he struggled to get into the Derby field. He was second emergency. But I remember I worked him on the course proper before the Derby. And I was just hoping that he got in the field. Like, he always had that great lung capacity, and he was just a natural stayer. And, you know, not many of them come around these days. And obviously now, probably missing the Derby's done him a favour. You know, he's a lot of horses don't come out of the Derby, so he's had that year, and he had that great grounding, and yeah, obviously won the Melbourne Cup.
So he gives you a different feel. The good horses give you a different feel.
Yeah, obviously, you know when you get on a good one.
Yeah.
And like I said, I think the best part about Vow and Declare was that his lung capacity was amazing. His ability to recover after any gallop was second to none.
When you're riding in a Melbourne Cup, is there much talk between the jocks?
What do you mean, pre-race or in the race?
During the race.
Oh, well, obviously, when the slow tempo was the other day, obviously, you don't want anyone falling, and we're all trying to help each other to give you maybe a little bit more room, but in the saying that, it's a Melbourne Cup.
So what are you actually saying to guys?
Oh, well, just, you know, I'm pulling or things like that, or just give me a little bit more room or give me time to adjust to the tempo and things like that. But at the same time, it is a Melbourne Cup, so you don't give away too much.
That must be a fine line for the boys, because, as you say, safety and welfare of your mates is paramount. But again, you don't want to leave a gap on your inside, do you?
Yeah, exactly right. I'd be like playing in the grand final, you know, and your mate's going for the footy. You're going to tackle him, aren't you? Mm. So it doesn't matter how good a mate you are. You're going to tackle him, and you're going to try and tackle him as hard as you can. It's like in the Melbourne Cup, you know, like you said, safety's everything, but you can only give so much.
Who's the toughest competitor in the jockeys' room?
Oh, I think all the boys are, you know, they got that will to, and you have to, you know, the jockeys ranks in Melbourne alone, you know, are second to none. I've ridden around the world, and, you know, our jockeys can go anywhere in the world and be highly competitive, and, we've proven that. I wouldn't sort of outline anyone to be more as competitive than anyone else. I just think, everyone's got to have that will to win, and if you don't, you're just going to get eaten alive.
As you said, you've ridden around the world. A Group 1 in Hong Kong must be a career highlight as well. What was that period like for you?
Yeah, well, obviously, that was 2009, so it's a long time ago now. But, yeah, it's something you'll never forget. Like, Hong Kong's meant to be the pinnacle of racing, and it's tough, but I was able to ride a Group 1 winner there, and that's probably the highlight of my career, just because I was there when I was so young and got out there and was able to achieve that through John Moore giving me the opportunity. But yeah, it was it's great to ride any big winner, but it was very, very satisfying at that young stage of my career to ride a Group 1 winner there.
Where else have you ridden, and what's been the toughest place to ride, as in racing, competitive and so forth?
Yeah, I think that to answer that question would be Hong Kong, just because at the time I was there, I had Douglas White and Brett Preble were the main two. The rally in Hong Kong, there's probably only three, maybe four chances in every race. So obviously Brett Preble and Douglas White were taking the two top ones. And then at the time, they were using their 10-pound claimers. So there's the four main chances gone. So your only real chance is to get on a young horse and try and follow it through. But due to the ratings, you obviously look at Zach Purton and Joe Marrera now. They've got their rides locked in for 3-4 weeks in advance. It's very, very hard to break into. So Hong Kong would definitely be the toughest jurisdiction I've ridden in. But I've ridden in Singapore, Malaysia, and Mauritius as well.
What was Malaysia like?
Yeah, Malaysia. Well, I went there when I was really young. I think I was there when I was 21. I went there. I was only there for about 8 months, but that was a good eye opener. I had to grow up pretty quick. You see and hear things that you've never seen before, and just a sense of how the way people operate. And it was just a great eye opener. It's probably made me the jockey I am today. And people might go, oh, that's a bit weird, but I just had to grow up real quick, and you just learn a lot faster, and I had to learn a lot faster.
Yeah. Back here in Australia, your first Group 1, who was that?
Absolute Glam.
Yes.
That was Brisbane Carnival. I think it was the winner stakes back then. That's the last Group 1 of the season now for the fillies and mares. She was a great horse to me. Danny O'Brien obviously trained her, and she was my first one.
And what was it like riding Swick in a Group 1?
Yeah, well, I won on Swick. It It was a Group 2 the year I won on it. The year before it was a Group 1.
Oh,
the
right.
old sprint up, this, up yeah. the straight. But Swick, yeah, that, geez, he was a, that's, he's probably the fastest horse I've ridden yeah. over a furlong. I remember old Bart said to me, oh, don't move to the clock tower. And I'm thinking, geez, the clock tower's pretty close to the winning post. And anyway, unbeknownst to me, I got to the clock tower and I had just a wall of horse. I couldn't do anything about it anyway. But when the gap came, he just took off. He went that quick, I nearly fell off the back of him. So he was probably at the moment, he's probably the horse that's had the most explosive turn of foot for a short period that I've ridden.
It must, when you look back on it now, give you a great satisfaction that you're able to ride a big race for Bar.
Yeah, I was actually rode a lot of winners for him. He was good. Obviously, I rode Swick, and then he presented me with precedence in the Melbourne Cup. So he obviously thought I'd win a ride at the Caper, and for someone of Bart's calibre to think that of you, it's a good feeling.
There was a period, though, where you almost threw it all in, didn't you? You thought about walking away.
Yeah, I just think, like a lot of sports people, you have enough. I think it's only, you're human. There's only so much you can take, especially the battering your body and when opportunities aren't coming your way. And, yeah, you just hit the crossroads, and I just thought I've had enough. I think if I kept going, I was only going to proceed to keep going on the downward spiral. So I elected to have, I think I ended up having 3 months off or something like that, and probably the best thing I did. Come back and you recharge the batteries, and yeah, keep looking forward now.
So you just had a normal life, did you?
Yeah, just had a normal life. Bummed around pretty much. You know, didn't do much, but just got the mind and the body back, and then obviously you realise that you do enjoy being a jockey, and we slowly wiggled our way back in.
Well, you got a wife and 3 children now. What is the life of a jockey like? What's your life like on a week-to-week basis?
Oh, I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's amazing, because it's not. It's very demanding. There's sometimes you leave early in the morning for track work, and you don't get home, you don't see your kids and your wife. You obviously, this time of year, you're stripping your body to weights that you don't normally ride. Like, for example, I rode 53.5 in the Melbourne Cup, and that was something that I had to do over probably a 3 to 4 week period, because I knew in the back of my mind that he was probably going to head down that path at some stage. And you want to be doing things right for the connections in them big races, you know what I mean? So, yeah, it's just, I'm lucky enough that my wife, she's good in the sense she knows what to cook for me.
She used to ride track work?
Yeah, she used to ride. She loves her animals. So we met over in Singapore I think I've been with her now 12 years. But she's very, very, at the end of the day, she just lets me do my own thing. I know 90% of jockeys can get, a little bit miserable and, want to bite their head off when they've got, you're restricted in your food and your water. But, I'm not one to complain. I sweat down at Brighton Bars now, and there's a lot of people that ask me a lot of questions and things. I mean, there's one old guy that used to play for the Western Bulldogs. He takes his hat off to me about how, how dedicated I am and that. But at the end of the day, I'm not one to sort of whinge and moan about it. I chose this profession. It's part of my job, and I just get it done.
What can you eat? Do you have to watch your food on a daily basis?
Yeah, I think, you've got to put in the take out. So as soon as you stop putting in, your body's not going to release. So even if it's just simply pure, as close you get to a race, even if it's a bit of watermelon, you drink water. I'm a tonic water fanatic. I just reckon it stops me from cramping, and I just sip on that. It's just more about being smart, but each jockey has their own way about how they approach it, and I just like to approach it. I try and eat something, daily or whatever.
So what would you eat normally?
Well, at the moment, when the weather's hot, which it hasn't been maybe one day out of the last 7 years, I'm a heavy fruit man, blueberries, strawberries, whatever. My kids love it, so that's what we do. Although you eat a little bit of red meat just to get your little portions, and you just be sensible about it, you know what I mean? But at the end of the day, there's, you got to have one day a week or whatever where you can go and have a couple of beers.
I was going to say, can you have a beer?
Yeah, you got it, mate. You'd do your head in if you didn't have a beer and see the boys and yahoo a little bit. It's part of life. You've got to be human.
Who's your clique? Who's the Rat Pack that you hang around with?
Look, I'm very good mates with Mark Zara, Benny Mallon, Luke Curry. Like, I get along pretty good with all the boys, you know. We've got a good respect for each other. And, look, when we tie one on, we like to tie one on and have a good time, you know. And I think you've got to do that in life, and everybody else does. And you've got to actually be able to go out, enjoy, have a bit of dinner, enjoy life, and, you know, be one of the boys and enjoy it, you know.
How's being a dad changed your perspective and your outlook?
Yeah, it's a massive change. You know, yourself, you've got kids, and when people say it's a life-changing experience, it definitely is. Sort of none of the prime example is it was Emirates night just gone. Normally we tie one on there, and, you know, you might, back in the day, I might not come home until the next day, but now me and my wife were on the dance floor. It was 1 o'clock, and I just looked at her, and she looked at me. She said, "I'm going," and I said, "Well, I'm coming with you," you know, I got three kids at home, and lucky I did, because at 7 o'clock in the morning, I heard little footsteps come up the hallway. Dad, bang, Carl, let's go for scooter rides. So lucky I had my head on my shoulders, and away we went down the scooter rides along the beach.
Yeah, you got, what, 3 under 6, isn't it?
Yeah, 3 under 6, yeah.
Busy times.
Yeah, so it's unlike Donkey Kong at my joint.
You mentioned how you rode Vow and Declare at its first start, and you did a lot of riding for Danny O'Brien. Was that tough when that relationship ended?
Yeah, look, it is what it is, I suppose. You know, I've ridden on and off for him for a while, and he's barred me again at the moment. But
have you got that kind of relationship?
Yeah, it is. It's just a love-hate relationship, you know what I mean? He's been so good to me, but sometimes he's given me, you know, the kicks that I didn't want to receive, but it's part of it. But look, I said, hats off to him. His business was dragged through a bush backwards, and, you know, if the bloke's been able to stay strong and obviously get back to the great heights of winning the Melbourne Cup. Obviously, I'm on the bench at the moment. He's dragged me through a bush backwards and left me out there at the moment. But, look, it's something. Look, I may ride for him again in the future, and if that opportunity come up for me to do that, you know, it's you just do it and you move on.
Is that hard to get used to, and then you've got to get a pretty thick skin getting sacked?
Oh, 100%. It's a brutal game, you know. You get sacked, you get put on the bench, you know. But I think... It's any job in the world, whether any sportsman, any footballer, you're out of form, you put on the bench. But, you know, racing, it is brutal in that sense. You ride horses that, you know, you've done nothing wrong or you win on, and they say that, but then you get taken off anyway. And, you know, I remember Danny Brereton said to me, I said, "Oh, I got taken off this horse." He said, "Well, you better toughen up there, Junior, because it's going to happen a lot more than what you think." So it always stuck with me, and it's going to happen more, and there's going to be times when I get jocked off, and there's going to be times when I jock someone else off. It's just the reality of the racing game.
How tough is that when you're mates with some, but it is cutthroat? And we see, you know, jockeys taking other jockeys' rides, especially in these big races. Yeah. How hard is that?
Yeah, look, it's funny. We're on a group chat, a few of the boys, you know, we all get it, and come springtime, we call it snake season. So there's no rules. You can't get the shits with it, with each other when, say, this bloke takes this bloke's ride. It's snake season for 6 weeks, and it's the reality of the spring carnival, and it is what it is. It's brutal, but we've grown, from the guys that I'm involved in on that chat, we've grown, you know, like, that, it is what it is. So you can't crack it and throw all the toys out the cot with your mates. It's a matter of sitting down, having a beer after it, and just letting racing go one way and you go one way with your friendship.
You got a good relationship with Mike Moroney. Where'd that all come from?
Yeah, I've ridden a lot for Mike for years now, but probably the last 5-6 weeks, since I won the Benalla Cup on Hangman. We've built a good relationship, and then we won the Maui Cup, and then him and his owners have been real solid with me through with Sound. Obviously rode him in the Turnbull, Caulfield Cup and the Melbourne Cup, and then had a bit of luck with him, but his owners have been good. So gentleman to ride for, and be nice to cap off the spring carnival and try and bang a couple of big race wins in for him this Saturday.
Gee, he looks hard to beat in the Sandown Cup. Do you think he runs a strong 3200?
Look, his form over where he come from suggests that he does, but it's hard to say off the slow tempo of a Melbourne Cup. It's obviously not a generally run 3200, but, you know, they zipped home and he only got beat 3.4 lengths. He's going to have to do everything right on Saturday with the 60 kilos to prove that he can run the trip. But he's got the form on the board. Like, I wouldn't have thought many of them horses in that race on Saturday would get beat three lengths in the Melbourne Cup.
Mm. How do you think the race will pan out?
I'm going to go, well, I haven't spoke to Mike at the moment, but I'm hoping to go pretty open-minded. He's, like I said, he's very, very quirky. He has a few tricks. He can pull quite hard, so he's been spending a lot of energy doing that, and to be able to still finish off in the way that he has has been pretty impressive. So if we can get him to switch off on Saturday, whether that's being last or taking it up, might be something that we have to try and experiment with, because, like I said, he's spending energy no matter what way you do it with by pulling. So I'll obviously sit down with Mike, discuss
it. He forward in a Sydney Cup, didn't he?
Yeah, not by choice, though. Yeah. He was aggressive that day, and Damien Lane had no option but to sort of take off and get around him, and he can be aggressive. So, yeah, hopefully we can sit down, go open-minded Saturday, and like I said, we'll ride him where he lands. If that's in front, so be it. If it's back, we'll let it be. Best thing about Saturday is only a field of seven.
That's right. Hackey normally goes forward. So.
Yeah, but was told the other day they're trying to go or middle with cover.
I'm going to have a chat to Archie Alexander a little later. Yeah, there was a steward's advice sent out that they're going to try and ride
Probably not the ideal race to try and do it in a field of seven and tempo coming out of it. But, yeah, look, it could play into our hands.
The Caulfield Cup we forget about as well. That was a stiff run. He copped a lot of interference at the point of the corner too, didn't he?
He did. That was probably the day that he actually did work with me, the horse. He was in a three-wide line with cover, and he actually switched off very good for the three quarters of the race. I got a bit excited on the turn. He actually zoomed up to him like he was going to run right in it, and then Vaughan declaring the eventual winner. Knocked the dints out of him. Probably, he wouldn't have won the race, but he probably would have run a nice fourth or fifth, and that's how we approached going to the Melbourne Cup with all the owners. He said, well, listen, let's think that we've run fourth or fifth in the Caulfield Cup. Forget about what price he is, and we knew that he'd go there and run well in the Melbourne Cup.
It was handy, slotted into 12.
Yeah, it was. He's unbelievable, that horse. He's finished, I think, 12th and 10th his last two starts, and he's earned their connections close to 300,000. Yeah. So, and being beaten four lengths in a Caulfield Cup and three lengths in a Melbourne Cup.
What are you going to do on Chapada in the Zipping Classic? I spoke to Mike Maroney yesterday, and he's a horse that's got so much talent, but we haven't seen his best for a little while.
Yeah, look, the reality is he probably should have won a Derby this time last year. Didn't. I was fortunate enough to work in Tuesday morning, and I was impressed with how he went about things, but I've been told he can do that at track work. But again, he's probably the fresher one coming on the scene in that race, and it always happens this time of year. The Zipping Classic's normally an afterthought, but with this horse now, he hasn't been taxed. I think it'll be probably maybe his fifth run coming in or fourth run coming in, so he should be cherry ripe, drawn a good marble. He's pretty push button from what I'm seeing with his replay, so we can just ride him to suit the tempo of the race.
How much homework do you do?
I do enough, but I don't overanalyze things. I think I started to dip into it quite a lot, and in the end you just rattle yourself because you think, oh, well, this horse by my map should have been here and he was not there, and then you go, oh, what's going on? So now I just do a little bit of speed, three or four horses that I think are winning chances, and like I said, a lot of the time, as soon as the gate's open, that changes anyway. So you just go on instincts, as good jockeys do, and you do what you think's best. And one thing I've learnt from riding for Team Hawks, you know, you keep it pretty simple. Don't overanalyze it and use your brain. If you jump, you go forward. Mm. If you don't, you miss a start, you go back and you go to plan B and work it out.
We've seen so many injuries in recent times, so many really, really bad injuries and fatalities as well. Is it hard to keep that out of your mind?
It is to a certain point. But, you know, unfortunately, in the game that we're in, you know, those risks are high. And, yeah, the last year's been horrific, really. And the last one really stuck with me with a girl down at Cranbourne. Now, an incident like that can happen, you know. Boy, girl, all that nonsense is, you know, it's just the way it is, you know. It's not, I wouldn't have thought that's got anything to do with it. It's just the luck of the draw. And yeah, it does. I think more now that I've got young kids, it sticks with you a bit more because, you know, you start thinking, well, if this happened, then, you know, but it is what it is. But you sort of clear your mind. But I'm not going to lie, it's always in the back of your mind at some stage, you know. You don't want to, whatever. But the day I'm scared or I feel that I'm putting any other rider in danger, the day I walk away.
How have you been with your career and falls?
No, well, touch wood. You know, I've had probably four or five race falls, but I've only, my worst one was at Flemington a number of years ago and did a youth Yorax, punching my lung and all those, but I haven't had any head injuries and I haven't had any breaks. Oh, I lie, sorry, crack thumb, but nothing too severe.
Yeah.
And I hope it stays that way.
We saw with last Friday night at Cranbourne with Motti as well, who's going to do it tough with two broken legs and his weight. What's your weight like? Can you relate to the guys that do it so tough?
Yeah, look, like I said, every jockey has whatever it is, what it is. But, yeah, I've got to, for me to ride 53.5, I've got to be bloody strict, you know. It doesn't just happen overnight, you know. And I think what a lot of people don't understand, the fluctuations from in your weights would get you more mentally. So you could ride 54 and come on Monday, you could wake up 57.5, 58.
Yeah.
And people, you say that, and people go, well, how did you put that much weight on? Well, a lot of it is probably you put 2 or 3 litres of water back in you and then you put food in because you've drained it so much. Your body said, mate, you're kidding yourself and I'm going to hold it, you know. But if you do it properly, like I did up into the Melbourne Cup, I rode 53. I would never have got any heavier than probably 55.5, 56 from that 2 week period, and then you'd gradually bring it down, and then all of a sudden you feel amazing on the day. Like Geordie Charles did it,
yeah,
did a big job, and he said it was the best he's felt for that period. I find if you do it properly, the stronger you feel anyway. You know,
you've got a lot of years left in you, but do you think about the future? What happens when you hang the saddle up?
Yeah, look, I've got a plan where I turn 36 on Melbourne Cup Day, so I've got probably another strong 4 solid years. Whether or not it's in Melbourne or overseas again, I always love riding overseas. Just something it's a bug that I've got. So whether or not it's here or there, but I'll put in a good 4 solid years, and then I've always said to my wife at 40, we're going to both sit down and assess on which path we want to take.
What would you do?
Number one question, isn't it? Maybe radio, mate.
Yeah, eh? Why not? You've been starring today. Well, we see Stevie Bastard. It's his last official day on Saturday. Yep. He's now getting into real estate. And I know there's a few land rats down the Bayside area.
Yeah, look, Stevie was, I mean, he was very smart. His retirement wasn't just put on the day. He was a build-up of getting all the background work into becoming a real estate agent. He did that on the quiet, nobody knew, and he was able to make that transition from jockey to real estate. And I think that's where a lot of sports people struggle, whether you're a football, soccer player, tennis player, is the transition from being told what to do for the most of your career and where to go, all that thing, and then all of a sudden you cut off at the knees and you hover around in that area. It's where you can suffer from depression and all that kind of stuff. So it's something that I've learned. I've been fortunate enough to have a few mates that have played football, and they've told me that it's important that you have pretty much something that you can move into, you know. At the same stage, chill out, and make sure that you've got something to roll into. And that's something that I'll work on over the next 4 years. What will that be? I'm not quite sure, but they've definitely got the ball rolling down the alley to get that into the process.
Who are your mates? Who do you follow in the footy?
I was a mad North Melbourne when I was little. Loved Wayne Carey, drove him insane. Got into the locker rooms with him, sat boy's car, he'd give me a hat and that. I knew you by name by the end. And even still today, I reckon you were there. We were in Sydney not long ago when I rode in sprint race up there, and Wayne Carey was probably 5 metres away from me, and I was still in awe of him. At this age, I'm 36, and he'd be whatever he is, 50, whatever he is now, but still to this day, he's one of me main guys. So I've got a little bit of a soft spot for North Melbourne, but like I said, I've had a few guys that play for Carlton and Geelong, so I don't really follow the one team anymore. But yeah, just watch them teams.
Love your footy. Is that how you try to unwind, relax?
If I'm being honest, I reckon footy's changed a hell of a lot the last couple of seasons. I don't enjoy it as much as I used to. I probably can watch a quarter or two, but I couldn't sit there and watch a whole game.
Yeah.
Can't even tackle them anymore. Back in the day when it was the Wayne Careys and that, like, them blokes can change a game of football on their own foot. You still have your greats now, don't get me wrong, like your Dustin Martin and, you know, your other players. But, yeah, in that sense. But I enjoy just maybe going to sit down with the boys, have a couple of beers, chill. But most of the time now, it's, as you know, it's just family time, getting to hang with them, whether it's scooter rides with the Melbourne weather. One day you're down at the beach, the next day you're at the coffee shop having baby chinos, marshmallows next to the heater, you know. And that's to me, that's what my life's all about at the moment.
Absolutely. before I end, a couple of quick ones. Who's given you the biggest spray you've ever had?
Oh, I'll never forget Jimmy Mason, 100%.
Really?
Yeah, Mountain Yard, Flemington.
Just, he comes across very mild manner.
Yeah, well, he tricks you. He tricks you. Yeah, just give it to me.
What was that on?
Oh, I can't remember what it was on, but I remember Flemington, the Mountain Yard, so I just had to walk away. So that was that.
So. who's the most demanding trainer? Don't have to name names, but do you get given a lot of instructions, or has it changed these days? Where?
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of obviously everyone has an opinion, but I find that a lot of trainers that I ride for, they put me on because they've got great confidence in me. Yeah, mm. They might say, oh, no, I'll try and be here or there, but like I said, yeah, and a lot of them, I think everyone's sort of got the same speed maps and everyone sort of knows where everyone's going to be, but like I said, when the gate's open, mate, it all sort of goes out the window and they put their trust in you to sort of make the right decision. And like I said, it comes back. I've been riding for Team Hawks for a long time. Just keep it simple. You know, if you jump and your horse is going to be there, save it. If you miss the start, you just got to go to plan B. Mm. I remember when I was doing a lot of riding for David Hayes when I first come back from Hong Kong, he had one rule. If you miss the start, don't dig him up. Just yep. ride him from there. And yeah, just got to pretty much keep it simple.
SMS here saying, can you ask if he's going to be riding Hangman in the Ballarat Cup next week?
Yes, I am. Back to 2,000 metres, which I think's his ideal trip. He's got a very, very explosive turn of foot over that distance. Mike did everything in his favour to get him to run the 2,400 in the Bendigo Cup, and he loomed to win, and probably the last 100 metres petered out. Not to say he doesn't run 2,400, but he's better suited at 2,000 where he can use his turn of foot and he'll be extremely hard to beat.
Yeah, it could be a nice end of the carnival, taking home a couple of cups of Sandown and Ballarat Cup.
Yeah, it'd be great. It'd be just like I said, it'd be good to do it for Mike, and his owners have supported me through the last 6 weeks of the carnival where it's, you know, it's very, very hard to get rides, but they've stuck solid. I can't thank them enough. So it'd be great to be able to repay them. Hopefully it'd be nice to bang in a couple on Saturday, and if we could finish it off with Hangman in the Ballarat Cup, it'd be the cherry on top.
Nice win yesterday on Mumbles as well.
Yeah, knocked one of Black Caviar's.
Yeah.
So a few people would have been a bit dirty on me, I suppose. But we're out there to win, and he won well. He's a nice horse for a good young trainer. Places his horse as well. Got a lot of time for him. He's very easy to ride for as well. So with his main jockey being out, Declan, obviously hurting his kneecap, I'll just slide in there. I'll do a little bit of work for him until he comes back in and fill the void and go from there.
A couple of quick ones. Best jockey you've ridden against?
Oh, I'd say Christophe Simeon.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Best trainer you've ridden for?
John Moore.
Mm. And best horse you've A, ridden, B, seen?
I'd say you'd have to say Winx is the best horse I've seen. And the best horse I've ridden, I remember I rode a horse called Able One in Hong Kong for John Moy. Went on to win two of the mile races over there. He was pretty special. But in Australia, I was probably more the race at the time was probably Star Witness when I won the Coolmore on him. Yeah. He was a pretty special horse.
Gee, absolutely.
Yeah, long time ago now, but the day he won, he was pretty dominant. But I've been fortunate enough to ride a number of good horses, and hopefully we can ride a few more.
Absolutely. Mate, it's been great to spend half an hour with you and have a good chin wag. Best of luck on Saturday. I think you've got two ripping chances at Sandown on Zipping Classic Day, and good to see you down around Bayside with the fam as well. We'll catch up soon.
All right, thanks for having me.
James Winx, Sarge Jockey, live in the studio. We're going to take a quick break.